Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. President Obama's signature domestic policy, the Affordable Health Care Act, has brought major changes to the U.S. health insurance system. A recent report by the Urban Institute titled Taking Stock of the ACA, the latest data from the Health Reform Monitoring Survey, provides insights on the implementation of the act. The report found that between September 2013 and June 2014, the number of uninsured adults fell by 8 million. Most of the gain was among low- and middle-income adults targeted by the ACA's Medicaid and Marketplace provisions. The largest coverage gains occurred in groups that historically have high uninsurance rates, young, male, and minority adults. So how is the Affordable Care Act working out for the millions who have signed up? How has it affected the quality of care and the costs? And what has your experience been like, whether you are newly insured or had to change your plan in some way? We'd love to hear from you, and you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. What changes have you seen? Have the costs come down? Have they gone up? If you've gone to the doctor after receiving this new care, what has your experience been like? Has the quality of care improved? 866-798-8255. Also, studies show that still so many Americans do not understand how the Health Care Act works. So if you have any questions, you can also give us a call or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are joined by Dr. Sharon Long, a senior fellow in the Health Policy Center at the Urban Institute and one of the authors of the Taking Stock report. Sharon is an economist with over 25 years of experience conducting research on healthcare issues, including state and national health reform. And she joins us from Washington. Hi, Sharon. Welcome to the show. And we are joined by Anthony Wright, Executive Director for Health Access California. Health Access is a statewide healthcare consumer advocacy coalition advocating for quality, affordable healthcare. And Anthony joins us from Sacramento. Hi, Anthony. Welcome to the show. Do we have Anthony and Sharon? Hello? Are you there? I can't hear either guest. Hi, Sharon? Anthony?
Hello?
Hi, Anthony. Welcome to the show.
Great to be on.
Great to have you. So I want to start off with you, Anthony. According to a new report by the Kaiser Family Foundation, about 3.5 million people just in California alone have signed up for insurance. What really strikes you about people who are signing up? Who are they?
Well, I mean, let's start from where California started. I mean, we had one of the worst rates of uninsurance in the country. We were seventh from the bottom, nearly 20% uninsured. And so this was not a problem that was limited to any one specific population. This was widespread. Many people fell into uninsurance when they were between jobs. Many young people who were in the beginning of their careers and had jobs that didn't provide health coverage at the job or found it to be unaffordable. It was a range of our low-income working families, but it was more and more prevalent in middle incomes as well. So certainly there are some demographics that tended to be more uninsured than others, but it was a big enough issue when you're talking about a fifth of the population that it affected everybody. And so to have the results that we've had is actually quite remarkable that we've both the Commonwealth Fund and the Kaiser Family Foundation both had surveys out in the last 2 weeks that showed that we basically reduced the number of uninsured by half, if not more, in just this first enrollment period. And, you know, that's striking. That's from so many years we thought that this issue was intractable, one of those insoluble problems. And but because California adopted and took advantage of the tools of the Affordable Care Act and in some cases not only implemented but improved upon that law, we're seeing real results.
And that is Anthony Wright, Executive Director for Health Access California. And Sharon Long, are you with us?
I am.
Okay, great. Nice to hear you. So your report from the Urban Institute found that between September 2013 and June 2014, the number of uninsured adults fell by 8 million. What really strikes you about those 8 million?
Well, I think interestingly, it's very similar to the California findings that you're reporting. That it is across the population. So we see gains at different income levels, but for different age groups, across race and ethnicity groups, and across gender. So and strong gains across the board. So that has been clear that the gains are not concentrated among a single population group. That it really is broad spread gains in health insurance coverage because of the ACA.
And what really strikes you about what you're seeing across the country? Because here in California, obviously, we're a big state, but the state put together a website that a lot of people said was a lot more user-friendly than the White House healthcare website. So what really strikes you about the differences between California and other states? I mean, 24 states are refusing to expand Medicaid, and according to the White House, nearly half of states are so locked into the politics that they're leaving about 6 million people uninsured.
And when we look by the states that have expanded Medicaid, so taken advantage of the ACA to make Medicaid available to more adults, we see that those states really have seen the greatest gains in coverage, and the states that have not expanded Medicaid have really left the low-income population behind. So I think it is increasingly the uninsured are becoming concentrated in those states that have not expanded Medicaid. Now, all states have benefited to some extent from the marketplace expansion. I think the outreach and education efforts have been greater in the states that have embraced the ACA than in the states that have not, but we do see gains across the board. I think when we look at the people who remain uninsured, I think one of the striking things there is many of those use the website only, while many of the people who gained coverage were looking at the website and talking to navigators and talking to brokers and talking to community-based organizations. So it seems clear that it's not just the website that's important. It's the broader system of support for people as they're trying to find coverage.
Also, according to a Pew survey, 63% of the population is still confused about the healthcare system. They still don't know if it's private or government-sponsored.
I think that is absolutely true. And I would guess our numbers would be even higher, that people don't understand what the ACA is doing and what some of the changes are. Even people who would be eligible, I should say particularly people who might be eligible for some of the supports, are not aware. And then when we look at what they understand about their coverage, we find that, especially for some of the newly insured who probably haven't had health insurance coverage in the past, understanding what it means to pay a premium, have a network, find a provider, pay a copay, all of those are new concepts that are making it very hard as people seek coverage for the first time or seek health care for the first time.
Anthony, what are your thoughts on that? Where is the best place to go to get that kind of information?
So I absolutely agree. Let's be clear. Health insurance is inherently not cheap and not easy. The Affordable Care Act was intended to and is helping make it cheaper and easier than it would have been, but this is still it can be tough stuff. It's still an inherently a product that is a major expense in people's lives, and it also is one that has some complexity. And so the hope, especially with what California has done, is that we're making it simple. So one of the things that we've done more than other states is, for example, standardize the benefits so that you can make true apples-to-apples comparisons, head-to-head comparisons between health plans and know that the benefit packages are the same. So you're really comparing it against cost and against the network that you are, whether you want the Kaiser network or the Anthem Blue Cross network or Blue Shield or whatever. Those efforts help simplify a bit. But it's also true that once you get enrolled, then there is an education about how to use coverage, and that's something that I think both the Covered California, our marketplace here in the state, as well as the insurers themselves are embarking on a variety of activities, but there's more that clearly needs to be done.
Right. I mean, it's understandable why it's confusing, because when you do go to the website to try to sign up, you get these tiered packages. And Denise in San Francisco just wrote in, Obamacare should be sued for discrimination. The three-tier level based on affordability gives people who can afford the highest tier more coverage versus lower coverage for those who cannot afford the top-tier premiums. What are your thoughts on that, Anthony?
Well, I mean, I think again, this is based off of this. This is based off the system we have now, but provides an improvement. So number one is there is a trade-off that people have to make. Do you pay more in premiums up front, but then have lower cost sharing, or do you want to have a lower premium, but then face a higher deductible, higher cost sharing? And for different people, they may want to take advantage of and make that choice about what they want that trade-off to be. I would say, however, that the Affordable Care Act has provided significant help to low and moderate income folks, because those folks, most folks under 400% of the federal poverty level, which is about $94,000 for a family of four, have access to subsidies, so that what the premium they're paying is not more than a percentage of their income on a sliding scale. That's the other really big thing about the Affordable Care Act, is that it provides financial help for people to be able to afford coverage, so that they're not paying more than, whether it's 2 or 5 or 9.5% of their income on a sliding scale, to be able to get a basic silver level plan. That's one of the things. We used to have a system where what you paid was based on what kind of job you had and how sick you were. Hmm. Now we have a system that's partially based on how much you can afford based on your income.
Right. Well, and Sharon, is there any way of knowing how many people have coverage that actually allows them to go to the doctor regularly, or how many people signed up specifically in a case of an emergency?
Well, we know that a fair number of people picked the plan with the lowest premium that they had available to them. And I think in part thinking that that was the lowest cost and not really understanding what that would mean when they went to obtain care. So we've been hearing from some of the survey respondents, as well as from some health insurance plans, that some newly insured are very confused when they go to the doctor and then they have to pay a fair amount because they picked a very low premium plan. So I think that increasing education on how health insurance work will be important for this next open enrollment period, as I think we'll see some people who picked the lowest cost plan last time maybe rethinking that this time and going with a plan that provides more coverage at a higher premium.
What else did you hear from the respondents?
I think we're still hearing a lot of confusion about both what does BACA do, so how will the individual mandate work, how will reconciliation work for the next period when people have to deal with the subsidies in the marketplace and what they've received versus what they are eligible for based on their income over the year. So I think a lot of confusion about what tax season will mean. It is a complicated, insurance is complicated and the ACA is complicated. And I think both of those are making people a bit nervous. So there's still a strong need for education.
And Anthony, in California next year, 10 companies will sell individual and family plans through Covered California. Do you think this will make the market more competitive? Will this drive costs down?
It's a similar mix from last year, and it is region by region, so it's 10 plans around the state, but in any given region, it's anywhere from 2 to 6 plans. We did get good news last week where Covered California announced its 2015 rates, and they continued to be competitive. The average increase, weighted average, was only 4.2%, and for those of us who remember year after years of double-digit increases, this is a welcome respite. I think it's a result of a number of factors, but it shows that some of the elements that we have in the Affordable Care Act and in California's implementation are having an effect. One of those is the fact that these insurers do have to compete. And for example, one of the insurers that priced high last year and didn't get that many customers as a result actually reduced its prices in order to be more competitive this year.
Hmm.
And that's actually one of the things that's good. If you have a system where people can actually compete, where people are no longer locked into their plan, or locked out because of pre-existing conditions.
What would be the best way to keep up with the price changes?
So so again, the announcement just happened last week. Those are for 2015 rates.
Okay.
There's another important thing about this new marketplace is that the rate that you are quoted is good for the entire year. It used to be the case in California that insurers could and would raise rates every 3 or 6 months, and that the rate that you had this month was no guarantee that that would be the same rate in 4 or 5 or 6 months. The 2014 rates that people signed up for will go through 2014. The announced rates for 2015 were just announced, and those are now loaded into the Shop and Compare tool on the Covered California website, which we should mention is at www.coveredca.com.
Right. There was some confusion about that because a lot of people thought it would be .gov, coveredca.com. That is Anthony Wright, Executive Director for Health Access California. We're also joined by Dr. Sharon Long, Senior Fellow in the Health Policy Center at the Urban Institute and one of the authors of their new report, Taking Stock of the ACA. And on today's Your Call, we are continuing our coverage of the Affordable Care Act, and we'd love to hear your experiences. What has changed for you specifically in terms of the quality of care and the costs? Also, a lot of people are still confused about the ACA, so if you have any questions, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And Denise, thanks again for your email. Let's hear from Melissa in Richmond. Hi, Melissa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have two pieces of information. One is a story about my ex-husband who was not insurable before the law changed and they made it illegal to do pre-existing condition screening anymore. And he didn't have coverage, and he got coverage through Covered California. He's been working for many small businesses throughout his working life, and he likes working at small businesses because they're agile, they think on their feet, it's a fun environment. But unfortunately, the majority of small businesses that have maybe 5 employees don't offer coverage, and it's been a real frustration for him not to have coverage. And then his wife is also, she likes the same kind of environment, so they've had to make the choice not to have coverage through an employer. So the fact that it was suddenly not, no longer tied to an employer, which kind of felt like slavery in some ways, like you have to stay at this job in order to continue to have health insurance, they were very happy to be able to have coverage through Covered California. And then subsequently he got blood work done and is now facing a long-term illness of ulcerative colitis that he didn't even know he had. And if he hadn't gotten the blood work, he could have died.
Wow.
Our daughter is really important in his life, and it's really important to me that she has a father that's around. So I'm extremely grateful for the coverage that's been provided. But again, it's sort of like gambling. The two experts mentioned that people have to make a choice about how much coverage they choose to have versus the premium, and it's based off of this ratio of your income to the expense that you're going to be charged. But in the Bay Area, the ratio doesn't really pan out. Rents are so high, the cost of living is so high, that I think many of us who are in the middle tier are thinking, well, how much longer can we really afford to live here? If we're not part of the dot-com boom, where is a place for us? And within this ratio, within this calculation, there isn't any effective way to put that in because it's based for the whole state. And on that point, I don't want to take too much time, but myself, I'm a teacher, and I started teaching. This is my third year. I made the choice to leave the benefits department of a large law firm to become a teacher precisely because I felt that the work that I was doing was ridiculous and redundant. There were people like me in businesses all across the downtown area in San Francisco doing the exact same work, enrolling employees, doing the same thing, and I wasn't adding value to the culture, so I chose to be a teacher. But in the district that I choose to teach, I cannot afford my daughter's health premium. I am every month behind. I'm not allowed to save any money because I'm paying off this $400 health premium because my district doesn't provide health insurance for her. And based on the calculations I've done on the website, I'm in that middle gap where there isn't any subsidy for me, and it would be a little bit less for me to purchase coverage for her.
Melissa, thank you for calling. Sorry to cut you off, but we have got full lines. You know, every time we do a show on this, Anthony, we hear similar sentiments from people who are kind of in the middle, and they're having a really hard time affording the premiums. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it's a very real issue, especially in California, especially in a high cost of living areas like San Francisco. You know, the good news about the Affordable Care Act is that it goes much further up the income range than most programs go. It goes to four times the poverty level, whereas, you know, previously, I mean, even the health reform that happened like 15 years ago for children, the state child health insurance program, that only went up to 250% of poverty level, which is about, you know, $60,000 for a family of four. So this goes up to about 95,000 for a family of four, 45,000-46,000 for an individual. But that's still struggling in a high cost of living area. And we would certainly agree that there needs to be more help, both for at the low income and at the middle income range. I think, however, it is providing hundreds, if not in some cases thousands of dollars of help for those folks, and it is at least putting a cap on how much those costs are. Remember, any coverage, even if you choose the bronze coverage, the cheapest premium coverage in the exchange, there is a limit on your out-of-pocket costs. So, yes, you may have as much as a $5,000 deductible, but if you get into something serious, your out-of-pocket costs are limited to, for this year, $6,200, which is a lot, but could be the difference between going into bankruptcy or not. So there clearly is more work to do, but this at least provides a platform to work from.
And Sharon, we have to go to break soon, but what does the data tell us about how people in the middle are they able to afford coverage? Do you have a data on affordability?
We do have some data on affordability, and I think you know, the caller's experiences is very much what we see, that it is the people who qualify for Medicaid tend to be pretty good shape for health insurance coverage and health care costs, but it's that group in the middle that is having a harder time, both having problems paying medical bills and having high out-of-pocket health care costs. And so one of the concepts that we will be tracking over time is both uninsurance and underinsurance, and that would be that even though you have a health insurance plan, you're having trouble affording the care that you need. And so for that group, you do see higher levels of unmet need for care, particularly for things like dental care that may not be covered at all.
Right.
Or vision care. And so it is absolutely a problem.
Mm. Well, I'll hold that thought. After the break, we'll definitely continue to talk about costs. And Melissa, thanks so much. And I hope that your ex-husband gets the care that he needs. And we'd love to hear your personal stories. We're talking today about the Affordable Care Act. What changes have you seen specifically when it comes to costs and quality of care? We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC, reporting from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. More on the Gaza conflict in the next hour, which is World Have Your Say from the BBC.
The This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about the economic value of national parks. Last year, visitors to national parks spent $1.5 billion statewide on the services surrounding the parks. So we'll talk about the internal economics of parks, and then also how have the services changed over the years? What does it cost to actually stay at a park, and who has access? That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.com. Today, we are continuing our coverage of the Affordable Care Act. According to the Urban Institute, between September 2013 and June 2014, the number of uninsured adults fell by about 8 million. And so today, we'd love to hear your personal stories. If you've received health insurance, if you actually were able to buy it under the ACA, how did you decide what plan to choose? How has the quality of the care changed? And what about the cost? Also, if you have any overall questions, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Dr. Sharon Long, Senior Fellow in the Health Policy Center at the Urban Institute and one of the authors of the Taking Stock Report. Sharon is an economist with over 25 years of experience conducting research on healthcare issues. Anthony Wright is Executive Director for Health Access California, a statewide consumer advocacy coalition advocating for quality, affordable healthcare. And let's go next to Ruthann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann.
Good morning. I was wondering, this is not firsthand experience, it's secondhand. I do know secondhand that friends of mine have been able to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act in California because of the Medicaid expansion. But my question is more that I have gleaned, again, not firsthand, but secondhand, that many people are going to doctor's offices, labs, facilities, saying, you know, I thought this place or person was on my plan, and they find out that they're not, and are being turned away, and that's called, quote, network narrowing, unquote, because of competition with places like Kaiser and other facilities. Different medical practices are finding that in order to compete with those large-scale processes, that they have to cut their payment to the doctors in the plan, and a lot of the doctors are just saying, I'm not interested, and so they're leaving. So the networks are narrowed. And I was just wondering if the guests knew anything about that.
Okay, thank you. Anthony, can you comment on narrowed networks?
Yeah, this is an issue that has gotten a lot of attention in the last year. There's nothing new about narrow networks. You know, managed care plans traditionally have said we're going to have a restricted network of that in order to get in network a certain level of cost sharing, you need to stay within a certain network. There is a sense and a truthful sense that some of the insurers, particularly Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, had narrowed their networks further to drive a harder bargain in negotiating rates with providers. That being said, there's been a reaction to that. Some of the insurers, because they got a lot more enrollment than they thought, have had to increase the size of their networks, and there's been actually a lot more regulatory scrutiny on this issue. We've been very active on this because, you know, we fundamentally believe that if you agree to have a to be within a network, as you are when you enter into any managed care plan, the managed care plan in return has to promise that that network is adequate to provide you timely access to care. And if it's not, then they're violating that promise and that contract. And so there's been a lot of regulatory scrutiny on this subject. The Department of Managed Health Care has been doing surveys and investigations. Department of Insurance is actually rewriting its regulations on the subject. We actually have a couple of bills pending in the state legislature to increase oversight over this issue so that when people sign up for a plan, they have confidence that you may not have access to every doctor in the state, but you have access to enough doctors and specialists that you have can get the care that you need when you need it, where you need it. That's the basic premise of the law.
What is the best way to get that information so you don't waste your time going somewhere that won't see you?
Well, again, one of the every plan is required to have a provider directory. There have been some issues about how accurate those provider directories are. That's been a longstanding issue. But especially now that people have the ability to choose and to shop around, it's more imperative than ever that those directories are accurate. And so I would say that it is important to both check with the insurer's directory, but also check directly with the doctor that you want to make sure is included, and say, do you take, whether it's Health Net or Anthem or whatever, Western Health Advantage or whatever the plan is, to do that double checking. That would be my consumer advice.
Okay. All right. Thank you for calling, Ruthann. Let's go next to Katia in San Francisco. Hi. Welcome to the show. Oh, did we lose Katia? I have an email from a listener, Nikki, who says, my husband is in his early 60s, was laid off during the recession, and started his own consulting business, got a much reduced health insurance rate from the California Healthcare website due to his low income the previous year. This year, his income is much higher than it was last year. Will we be hit with a huge tax bill at the end of the year? Will we have to reimburse the discounted rate we got? How does that work? Anthony, do you want to take that?
The answer is that if there has been a change in income, you should inform the Covered California about that, so that your subsidy can be adjusted, so that you don't have a big true up or reconciliation in your taxes in next year's taxes. This is not dissimilar to your employer withholding of your taxes, where you do an estimate at the beginning of the year, but then when you file your taxes, it gets chewed up, and your refund or the payment that you have is affected upward or downward depending on your income. So the way to prevent either a big refund or a big payment at tax time is to inform the exchange and the plan of changes in your income through the year.
Okay. Thank you for the email, Nikki, and I hope that helps. Let's go next to Mike in San Francisco. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I would just like to talk about, again, the cost per month for some of us. I retired a couple of years ago, and in addition to having to buy health care, I lost my employee coverage and was forced onto the market. And I also had a significant drop in income, but we're still making more money than allows for a subsidy from the government. My wife and I, for the two of us, are paying over $1,200 a month, which is way above 10% of our income. And it seems like the government's aware of the problem, because they tell us we won't have to pay a penalty, because they know how much it's going to cost us. I'm just curious if this is going to change when I'm finally eligible for Medicare, and just what you think of this.
All right, thank you. Sharon, can you take that one?
Sure. I mean, I think once you are eligible for Medicare, you will not need to be buying this coverage in the marketplace. I mean, you may want a supplemental plan, but then there will be no co-pays for you then. But I think you are in that world now where you're one of the population groups that doesn't have the financial protection, the lower premiums. And I know it is a challenge and an issue there.
Where do you see costs going in the future?
I think there is hope. There is some signs that healthcare costs may be not growing as quickly. I wouldn't say dropping, but certainly stabilizing somewhat in terms of the growth rate. I don't think we know yet exactly why and what's driving that, but there is some hope that it might be a more long-term relationship. But it is a hard change to make, to change how we pay for our healthcare costs, and there's a lot of pressure to not push back on those costs. One of the realities in many states is that many of the jobs are in health and health-related sectors, and so pushing back on the cost of health care is also pushing back on salaries and incomes for those who rely on that sector. So it is a very challenging problem going forward.
Does this also, I mean, we often talk about the cost of health insurance specifically, but what about price gouging? I just was thinking about this massive Newsweek piece that ran, I think it was last year, 20,000-word piece by Stephen Brill. He looked at markups from, you know, everything from cancer drugs to blankets to routine procedures, writing that because these treatments are so profitable, internal systems within the hospital are geared toward prescribing a lot of them. So does the ACA do anything to also address these issues?
I mean, it certainly is part of what the ACA hopes to do, is to take on healthcare costs. And there's a lot of experimental components to the law, or should say a lot of experiments in the law to try to track that. So some pilot studies on changing the way we pay for healthcare, encouraging accountable care organizations, encouraging system reforms to make the system, the healthcare systems broadly more efficient. But they are not; those provisions are more experimental than some of the changes now around expanding health insurance coverage. You know, and I've done a lot of work in Massachusetts in evaluating health reform there, which started in 2006. So it really was the precursor to the national reform. And they, you know, they are still struggling with how do you bring down the growth of healthcare costs, and it is. It's a very hard challenge, harder than expanding coverage.
You know, we saw, I think, I'm thinking about that documentary Sicko by Michael Moore, when he focused on so many families who were not given the coverage they thought they deserved from the health insurance industry because they have so much power. Has that changed much at all? I mean, has the way the health insurance industry work changed at all because of the ACA?
I would say not yet. And whether it will change over time, I think, is still an open question. You know, many of the changes that are being pushed forward under the ACA, you know, moving toward accountable care organizations, we see more consolidation of healthcare providers in the market, actually could go the other way as it gives providers more power in the market. And so I think there's still a bit of an open question as to what will happen with healthcare costs under the ACA.
Let's go next to Alex in San Francisco. Hi, Alex. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. The hoops people got to go through to figure out cost and benefits that health coverage is itself can make you sick, ironically. And I just wonder, why don't they just double doctors' pay? Because what they go through to be doctors, and then the kind of work they do is just incredible. And then, so healthy people and educated people are a public good, as the economists would put it, meaning they benefit society, they don't benefit just the individual. If you people are educated and if people are healthy, less cost of health care. So why don't we have a single-payer health insurance like the civilized societies have some other places in the first world? When is it going to dawn on the American public to see this craziness that's going on, where people have to be financial wizards and lawyers to figure out what health care they should buy or can afford?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, this comes up on every show we do about healthcare, single payer, basically Medicare for all. Anthony, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, we've talked about what's happening here in California. What is the status of the single payer bill in California?
There's not a bill pending in the legislature right now. You know, that's a reform that Health Access, my organization, also supports. Some people look to 2017, that's when the Affordable Care Act has a provision that allows states to be come up with innovation waivers where they can get special permissions to do different approaches to health reform, that as long as they meet the same goals of, you know, coverage and cost and access and the like. We know that that's what Vermont is looking for, which is the state that is furthest ahead in really looking at the potential of a single-payer system. In California, there's obviously some interest in it, but there's also some of the obstacles that have bedeviled efforts in the past, you know, namely a two-thirds vote in the legislature to raise taxes, our initiative system, et cetera.
And Sharon, what are your thoughts on single-payer? Do you think that we'll get there in our lifetime in this country?
I think there's some thought that it may be the default model when lots of other things fail. But I think clearly politically it's certainly not feasible across the country at this point, that we're much more in an incrementalist mode.
Well, and also, do you think that the ACA is a step towards something better? Because that's, you know, in the single-payer docs say that the ACA really doesn't do that much to help people. Others say, well, yes, it does. Look at all of the low-income people who are now signed up. And this is just a step in a better direction. Is that where you stand?
I mean, that certainly is what I see is, you know, if we view uninsurance as the first step, or gaining coverage for the population that's uninsured is the first step toward providing health care for all, then we've clearly made a huge step forward by covering, you know, 8 million more people in the first 6 months after the Medicaid and Marketplace expansions began. How it's paid for is another issue, and you know what the structure of that is. But I think once we gain coverage and have, you know, something much closer to universal coverage, then we've got a much stronger system to work with, regardless of how the payment mechanisms are set up.
I would also make the case that it already is the case today. That, I mean, California is an example of where we have taken proactive steps beyond the Affordable Care Act, using it as a platform to maximize the benefit for Californians. Again, we created an exchange that is an active purchaser that just didn't list anything that the insurers wanted to sell, but actually actively negotiates for the best price and value. An exchange that standardizes the benefits so that people can have the head-to-head comparison and that apples-to-apples comparison that allows them to get the best product and a simpler experience. We've expanded coverage beyond what the Affordable Care Act allows for recent legal immigrants and other populations that are excluded under the federal law. We've gone beyond in some early and in some cases beyond in some of the insurance market regulations, so that, again, there are elements in the law that really do help to reduce the cost of health care, whether it's the medical loss ratio to make sure that 80% of your premium dollar goes to patient care rather than administration and profit. But then we're looking at doing other things. One of the things that's on the ballot this fall is Proposition 45, which is a rate regulation measure to give the Department of Insurance more authority to reject unreasonable rate increases. So, you know, California is looking at taking some additional steps, and so I think that there is opportunity for additional reforms in the future as well.
And again, that's Prop 45, and I'm sure we will definitely have shows and debates about those props. That's Anthony Wright, Executive Director for Health Access California. Dr. Sharon Long is Senior Fellow in the Health Policy Center at the Urban Institute. Today on Your Call, we are continuing coverage of the Affordable Care Act, and we'd love to hear from you. If you've got any questions, if you have personal experiences, if you work in the healthcare field, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to David in San Francisco. Hi, David.
Hi, Rose. I was going to raise the idea that inflation and expectation of market share have actually, the investors are demanding these higher prices, and so they're basically killing the golden goose. And just a reminder, when Christopher Columbus came over to and discovered us, and he hauled all of that gold back to Spain, they basically, if I understand right, they quadrupled the amount of gold in their treasury, but they created an inflation rate that was about 7 or 8 times. So they actually had more poverty, even though they increased their treasury by fourfold. So there was horrible starvation after that gold arrived in Spain because inflation went so insane. So if you look at the very idea that the investors, you know, if you have a stable economy and everybody, as soon as you get a sniffle, you get go down to the clinic and you get a whatever you need, a clinic is very cost effective. You stitch in time sort of mentality, prevention is the cost effective way of doing things. No, they've got us stuck on emergency rooms and no clinics, so we're doing the most expensive thing at all times. And it's all profit motive.
Well, thank you for calling. We have an email from Michael who shares a story about how his $1,000 a month plan went down because of the Affordable Care Act. He says, I appreciate that the act does not discriminate against prior conditions. This is humane. I also appreciate that I'm free to shop. However, this is still not the answer. I still cannot think of the humanity or justification for the insurance business. They're the culprit. As long as they exist, the system will not be fair and the priority will always be profit over fairness and service. And again, this goes back to the question I asked you, Sharon, have the health insurance companies really changed their practices? But again, it's just too early to tell. At what point do you think we'll have a good sense of whether or not the money is actually going to the quality of the care?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we will start tracking or seeing evidence of, you know, is there evidence of better quality of care? So are people getting preventive services? Do we see, as you know, the caller mentioned, do we see reductions in using the emergency department for routine care? Do we see reductions in hospital readmissions because people are getting better care in the community? You know, we're tracking some measures of difficulty finding a provider, including difficulty finding a provider who'll see you because of your insurance type. You know, right now we're seeing that as very stable, and we're not seeing a change, but we will be tracking that over time. So, you know, is there evidence that people are starting to have problems finding a provider as more people are insured? So I think there are a lot of markers that we'll start to see over the next 6 months that will indicate, you know, is the system getting better, getting worse, staying the same? Do we see evidence that the people who've gained coverage are getting good quality care? You know, I think what we saw in Massachusetts, which again was kind of an earlier round of reform, was you saw many more people reporting preventive care and people reporting a little bit less reliance on the emergency department. So I think there are some clear signs to look for as the rollout continues.
And Anthony, who's tracking that in California?
Well, I think, first of all, I actually do think that the way that insurers are doing business has changed. I mean, I think it was impossible not to. I mean, maybe different from some other parts of the country, but California really was the wild, wild west in terms of insurers and what regulation we did or frankly didn't have over them. You know, the fact that they can't deny people for pre-existing conditions fundamentally changes their business model. Now, I think it's correct that we haven't. It's quite a transition to go from from basically avoiding a business strategy that is predicated on competition by avoiding sick people to one where the insurers are actually competing on cost and quality and customer service. And that's the transition we're in right now. And you know, can the new regulations, the new oversight, between our two regulators at the Department of Insurance and the Department of Managed Healthcare, as well as our new marketplace, Covered California, can they provide a environment that basically puts a leash on the insurers to basically have the right incentives around cost and quality, rather than just avoiding risk? And that's the thing that we really are going to be seeing. But those are the key regulatory bodies, our regulators, Department of Insurance, Department of Managed Health Care, the marketplace and its power as a negotiator, Covered California, and then, you know, clearly advocacy groups like ours, Health Access, where if you folks want to check our site out, we're at www.health-access.org.
All right. And Sharon, we've just got about a minute left. What else are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on what's to come with this? I mean, there was that deadline in January, but if I remember correctly, it was pushed back. Is that right? The deadline to sign up for insurance?
Mm-hmm. There was an extension of the window, I think, because of all the problems with the website.
Right. So what's this update on that?
So it will we'll have a new open enrollment starting in November of this year, and another chance for people to enroll who haven't already enrolled, as well as for people to re-enroll. And I think that will be a critical part of the next round, is making sure that people who have gained coverage renew that coverage or renew some coverage going into the next year.
And the simplest way, I mean, and last past shows, people have gone to websites, but they have also gone to community centers to talk with people in person.
And I think what we've seen is that the people who went and talked to people in person were more likely to gain in coverage than people who just looked at the website. So I think it's clearly helpful to have navigators and brokers and such who are helping people with that process.
And then the best way to get questions answered, Katia wrote back, she called earlier, and she said her experience with doctors is they say they take Blue Shield PPO until they hear she's on Covered California, and then they say she's out of the network. So what's the best way to get these sorts of questions answered?
I think the best way to find out which physicians are in your plan is to call the plan. And either if you know a physician you want to see, you call that physician, but otherwise call the plan and ask for an updated list of providers. But I know that is often a challenge to get that updated list, and sometimes it's necessary to make multiple calls to find a provider who will take your insurance type. And I would say that's also a problem for people on employee plans. I mean, I often have that problem in my plan. I think health insurance companies are often not very good at having up-to-date lists of who the providers are who have openings in their panels.
Well, we will definitely continue covering health care. And again, the website for California, Covered California, is coveredca.com. Dr. Sharon Long is a senior fellow in the Health Policy Center at the Urban Institute, and Anthony Wright is executive director for Health Access California. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. What is the economic value of a park? On the next Your Call, we're talking about how parks shape the towns that act as gateways to nature. Last year, visitors to national parks spent $1.5 billion statewide on services surrounding the parks. So how have these services changed over the years? And what does it cost to stay at a national park? Who has access? And how do the internal economics of a park work? It's Your Call with Hannah Baba and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.